All right, so my name is Magnus. I'm a Swedish security researcher, which also means English isn't my native tongue, so please bear with me. So this is about an anonymity protocol, or an anonymity project that I've been looking at. And a little bit of background first. Why is this interesting? The last few years, we've seen a big upswing in anti-online privacy measures of different kinds. Like a lot, big force behind it is, of course, huge pressure from media companies, which have resulted, and other things, of course, but which have resulted in, private organizations tracking users and sites by miscellaneous illegal means. ISPs tracking and throttling arbitrary traffic, both for these media company reasons and commercial reasons as a by effect. Data retention laws in Europe and other parts of the world. Wiretapping laws in Sweden and in the US too. For example, the FISA recent law proposal or whatever. Other draconian laws for tracking and punishing peer-to-peer users, like the ACTA trade agreement proposal and a French law proposal proposing to starting to ban peer-to-peer users if being caught sharing files three times, they will be banned for 1 year or 3 years or something from the internet. ISPs are starting to be forced to police the traffic of the users, have to take responsibility for what the users are doing, which is of course hard and quite impossible. It's blacklists of different kinds. They often use child porn as some kind of excuse, but these blacklists have already been abused for other kinds of things. One quite funny example is there was this Finnish EFF activist who exposed and criticized these blacklists they had in Finland that were, they have the, it's a child porn blacklist, so the ISPs nationwide just blocked some IP addresses. So he put up a website with criticism against this, and his website was put into this blacklist, which was of course quite ironic. Also the US US ISPs recently have started to block or stop their users from getting any access to news groups at all with the excuse of there could be child porn on them, but so let's block them all. But of course there are other forces behind that, other IDs behind that. And then, of course, dictatorships and other regimes oppressing their people, blocking them, tracking them, punishing them for viewing the wrong websites. And also, there's even a recent European law proposal that you should not be able to have your own blog unless you're registered by name and address, and so that everyone can track the opinions of everyone writing anything on the internet and make sure that they're not writing anything wrong. So that's a lot of things, anti-online privacy-wise. So because of this, I'm quite surprised that there haven't been any bigger adoption of anonymity solutions used by everyone. Sure, we have Tor, and it's a great protocol. But it's not like everyone's using it for file sharing. We have de facto standards like BitTorrent, and so if you're going to download a big file or share a big file, that's BitTorrent. But for anonymity, not so many people know about this or use it, in spite of all these anti-online privacy measures. And also these existing solutions, they in some ways or in quite a few ways are not well suited for some of today's and the future's demand for anonymization and the circumstances surrounding it, while at the same time they are of course really good in many ways. I thought, well, if no one else is doing it, why not sit down and think about this for a while? A new anonymization standard, de facto standard that everyone can use for most things, which will hopefully solve some of the shortcomings or shortcomings of the current solutions in view of current circumstances. And that's how this project started. So what are the goals of the project then? I want it to be some kind of good reference for future work within the field of anonymization, so that others can build upon it. I want to start this kind of work for this idea, and then hopefully it'll grow and be some kind of inspiration for further discussion about what are the optimal requirements for a protocol like this, a future anonymization solution like this. And of course also to be some kind of starting point and inspiration for the actual design and development of a project like this, a global de facto standard for decentralized generic anonymization. What it is not, at this point anyway, is a complete detailed specification ready to be implemented. It's rather something, some ideas, some designs to be built upon, discussed and refined into something of these sorts. So some technical limitations, or one central technical limitation of this, is that the protocol, like most other anonymization protocols, really don't work or aren't designed to work if there's an attacker controlling, or rather eavesdropping all network traffic from all nodes in the certain network that you're trying to anonymize yourself in. It should be noted, though, that such an attacker will, of course, never be able to see what the different nodes are talking about, only perhaps under these extreme conditions who they are communicating with. And of course, the protocol contains countermeasures in order to counter or decrease the probability that any attacker should be able to eavesdrop many nodes. Some other assumptions and directives are that arbitrary peers in the network are of course assumed to be compromised and or adverse, because this is a decentralized network. Everyone else is just, no one is more central or more known to the project than you yourself if you're joining, so of course they could be bad and try to break things. And also one important directive during the development of this is that CPU power, network bandwidth, working memory, secondary storage resources, all computer resources practically, are relatively cheap and will of course be available in ever-increasing quantity now and even more during coming years. So wherever there has been a choice of stronger anonymity, stronger security, or more throughput or lower resource consumption, the security has always been put in first place. So some limitations of this presentation: it's only an overview, something to get you the starting details about what this is, and to so that you should be interested more in the white paper and also to discuss things with me or on the project website, which you will see later. But the white paper can be downloaded immediately if you want to take a closer look. So let's start with some of the design goals set for this project. What I wanted to do when I started this, I thought, like, I'm going to sit down and think really good from the start, from the very, very, the design goal level. What are the requirements of this protocol to make it good in today's world? Today and the future. So I came up with 8 primary design goals, which they're in the list here, but I'm going to go through them one by one in the following slides. So the first design goal is complete decentralization. No central or weak points can exist in a network like this, because there will be people who don't want such a solution as this to exist. So people will work against it, both legally and technically. They will try to sue the people running it at some point, just like most similar solutions have ended or been attacked so far. And if that won't work, there will be technical attacks of different kinds, practically DOS attacks or takedowns of servers and things like that. So it's very important that there are no central servers, no central point that you can attack in order to bring down the whole solution or the whole network. So both ownership to protect from legal attacks and the technical design to protect from technical attacks must be decentralized, which means open source, open design, community owned project, and a technically decentralized solution. Design goal number two, maximum DOS resistance. As mentioned in the last slide, if you decentralize it like this, the practically only way to stop it will be to DOS the network, find technical flaws in it, and exploit them in order to mess it up, bring down the network, and make it unusable. And as usual, it only takes one weakness at some point of the protocol to bring it down. So defensive thinking throughout the design process is very important, and the implementation process. Design goal number three, theoretically secure anonymization, which practically means no security by obscurity, no leaving anything to chance, thinking, oh, they wouldn't do that. That would take too much resources or time. So rather, all the anonymization aspects, I think, should be able to be expressed either as a risk probability based on known probabilities, like how many nodes in the network, if 90% of the nodes in the network are controlled by an attacker, then the probability to be exposed is this and that and such things, and also cryptographic proofs, like if the RSA algorithm is broken, this will fail too, but if it's not broken, this should be secure, this part. Design goal number four, secure and theoretically secure end-to-end encryption. Quite an elementary thing in today's internet, but still very important, because confidentiality is not only important in itself, but also important for anonymity, because if a connection is eavesdropped for enough time, it's highly likely that some sorts of identifying information will be sent over it. So confidentiality is directly important to anonymity too. So which means that even if someone would monitor and correlate all traffic in the network with the current design, they will not be able to extract any of the communicated information in it. It will only be viewable to the exact communicating endpoints, just like with SSL or something like this, but this is bounced around a bit first. So another one, more interesting one, is isolation from the normal internet. And by normal internet, I mean like the normal IP space. You shouldn't be able to say, with Tor, for example, you can say, I want to contact this and that IP address on that port, and I want to be anonymous. This will, of course, result in the final node, the exit node or the out proxy, that connections can be traced back to this one, and he can get in trouble if someone hacked a government computer from him as the last node in going through Tor, for example, which would, of course, make people less likely to want to use such a solution. So I rather wanted to make it an isolated network where only all the people who joins they can decide that we want to be anonymous towards each other, but for that sake, no one should be able to use this network to go out to any other node on the internet, IP address on the internet, who has not agreed to be part of the anonymity solution. So it actually has quite a lot of advantages like this, but not so many disadvantages when you come to think about it. And of course, out proxies or exit nodes towards the normal internet could still easily be implemented at the application level. For example, a SOX proxy connected to this or something like that. So no big deal at all. It's just not in the protocol like Tor. Design goal number six, protection against protocol identification. There will, as I mentioned before, probably be a lot of powerful interests of different kinds who want to see such a solution stopped. And this can result in laws that force ISPs to block it or disable it or throttle it or something like that, which they are already today doing with some other protocols that are not very liked by certain organizations. So the harder it is you make it to positively identify that you're using it at all, the harder it will of course be to track, throttle, and block it. So that's one of the major design goals. Cycle number 7, high volume and throughput capacity. With existing solutions like Tor, this is a big problem. You are practically not allowed to send larger amounts of data through it. And in today's internet world, even larger volumes are required for normal internet use each day, like just viewing YouTube movies for a few minutes could consume hundreds of megabytes, which would be a problem through Tor. You can even be kicked from Tor by it because you're breaking the rules. Yeah, more or less, high speed and throughput is necessary for many internet applications today. And the popularity of a protocol like this will, of course, be proportionally related to the transfer speed and the throughput capacity of it. Otherwise, the people who needs more capacity, more speed, they won't be interested and they won't join it or use it at all. And since the anonymity of the protocol, as most other anonymity protocols, are directly related to the popularity of it, or rather to the number of people connected to the solution that data can be routed through, this is directly important to the anonymity of it too. Design goal number 8, the last one, a bit more loose. A generic, well abstracted, and backward compatible. Just a generic system, that generic network traffic could be anonymized through it, contrary to an anonymized IRC client or anonymous FTP client or something like this. It could anonymize generic network data. Well abstracted system and design will of course allow for a more efficient and distributed design and implementation in general, just common software development. Also the backward compatible thing is quite important, because a system compatible with all previously existing network applications will of course get a much quicker takeoff and community penetration, because everyone can just activated for the programs they use every day, and they will don't notice any difference except the relative slowdown, which we will of course try to minimize. But if, as for some other of these solutions, you have to compile special programs to be able to use it at all, or use SOX proxies, like in this case of Tor many times, there will be much bigger threshold for people to start using it at all, which is, of course, critical to the security of the protocol. So a small bird's eye view to start with of the technology or the ID, general IDs. I'm not sure. Can you see this? Yeah. So on the internet today, you have two nodes out of many who want to communicate with each other. They normally do like this, create direct connection to each other. This, though, does not only mean that they can send and receive data to and from each other, but they also automatically know the identity of each other, which in most cases isn't necessary at all for the reasons that you are doing this communication. So that's a bad idea, if you want to be anonymous. So the natural thing to do with any or most anonymization protocols is to bounce the data through a set of different nodes, so the data will still reach the nodes in the end, but they will no longer know each other's identity automatically, implicitly. And in this case, and as with so many other good protocols, good anonymization protocols, you do this by having paths which the different nodes will route their data through. In this particular case, each node will be responsible for creating their own paths. So Alpha will create its path and make it ready for communication. Beta will create its path and make it ready for communication. And if they want to speak to each other, the paths will be interconnected, and data can then flow through between Alpha and Beta, like any other connection, just with a few computers between instead of just a few routers. So these routing paths, In order to make it more secure and more customizable, each of the nodes can, as mentioned before, build their own nodes, build their own routing paths, sorry. So if Alpha is really paranoid, it could build a really long path. And if Beta is less paranoid, he can build a shorter path. And they will still be able to just interconnect them to be able to speak. Very basic stuff. So a little more on high-level design of this protocol. You have these routing paths, which consist of the anonymized node, an intermediate node, and an arbitrarily more intermediate nodes, where the number is chosen by the anonymized node itself. And then, in the end, a terminating intermediate node. That's the exit node or entry node, the last intermediate node in the routing path. So then something I call routing tunnels. That's something where all the anonymized nodes, they create a couple of these, handful of these routing paths when just connecting to the network, when they're starting their computer or whatever. It could take 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 2 minutes. It's a one-time thing, or at least a very rarely rare thing. So it doesn't really matter that it takes a bit of time. But once those routing paths are up and they want to make a connection to someone, that's when they create a routing tunnel inside the routing path. And and like I said, and it will just be a virtual connection practically, or inside this routing path. And the important thing is that it will be set up relatively quick over existing hops and existing TCP connections, not exclusively, but anyway, as we will see, which will then be connected to a routing tunnel in the receiving routing path, the routing path of the receiving node, which will form a complete anonymized connection. As you see there, the connection goes out from the last, the terminating intermediate node, and will be connected to the incoming routing tunnel of Beta. And now we have a full anonymized connection. So then the concept of AP addresses. Because this protocol is separate from the normal internet, we have our own address space. It is very, very similar to the address space of internet, though, for a reason. Even the name, AP address, IP address. This is called anonymous protocol addresses, contrary to internet protocol addresses. They are equivalent to IP addresses in their format. They are equivalent to IP addresses in their functionality, except for one important thing, the main important thing, of course, that they do not expose the identity of the peers just because they can talk to each other. So the reason that they are so similar is, of course, that to make it easier to make the protocol backward compatible with all IP applications, that the IP applications will just think that they are using normal IP addresses, but in reality they will be using AP addresses, but they won't be the wiser. To make something like this work, a completely decentralized solution, you would think that you would need some kind of central directory or central entity to let the nodes be able to find each other and interact. So enter the network database. You can compare it to the routing tables of the normal internet. Someone would state an AP address, or will have an AP address that they want to use, and the network database will contain the information that will be needed to send the information to the endpoint that they would like to reach. On the normal internet, that would be bouncing through different routers. In this protocol, it will be bouncing between different computers or nodes. Very, very much similar to Tor, for example. This database will be distributed and decentralized, and suggestively it would be based on distributed hash table technology. This is a proven technology. It's used in several large-scale implementations, like, for example, the CAD network, which is a Kademlia-based distributed hash table network used in EMU. The main thing is that there are no central servers, no central anything, only the nodes, but together they form the equivalent of a centralized database which people could execute queries against, and just like a database. Most of these distributed Hashtable technologies have automatic resilience to constantly disappearing and newly joining nodes, because people should be able to just connect to the network and then disconnect when they're finished, and the integrity of the database should still be kept. And they also, many of them also has automatic and built-in resilience to some degree for malicious nodes, and that's of course good. But as I mentioned, the network nodes are the database. The network nodes joining the network, that is your computer, my computer, you're part of the network as soon as you connect. So a few more design details. And this is the most detailed part of the presentation. I'm not sure if you'll be able to grip everything right here and now, but it's just to be able to provide some kind of understanding what's going on. So when you want to establish this the initial routing paths. Alpha, we have here Alpha. He wants a routing path which he wants to be able to use to make outgoing and incoming connections, anonymous connections. So the first thing he does is he chooses at random. He actually uses the network database to get a few samples of IP addresses which are also in the network. And this is IP addresses, like the IP addresses of your computer, my computer, who has also joined this network. This information in the database is of course completely decoupled from the IP address information about nodes, which would otherwise compromise the entire meaning of this protocol. So he chooses at random, at his own will. He can pick these however he wants to. So if he gets a sample of 1,000 IP addresses from the network database, he can look like, okay, are these in the same CNET? Are these in the same VNet, ANet? Are they at the same ISP? Are they in the same country? By that he can select them in a way which is as to make it as improbable as possible that they would be controlled by the same attacker. Next, he chooses a bunch of more nodes in the exact same way, which will be helper nodes only contributing to the setup process of the path, but not in the actual path. The X nodes will constitute the actual path. So he then orders these nodes in a sequence according to certain rules, which we will see right in just in a few seconds, like this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 8. So the rules are that no two X nodes can be adjacent to each other. The X nodes are the ones who will be in the final routing path. There should be one Y node located at the one end of the sequence. There should be a number of Y nodes located at the other end of the sequence, equal to the total number of X nodes minus one. And then when you have selected this sequence, you should pick one end of it at random to be that starting point. That is the one where you start numbering it from one. Let's just rearrange this for the further explanation. After this, the node alpha prepares what we call a goodie box for each of the node. So he gets a big box and he puts some small boxes in it. One for each of the nodes, and he could also, as you see with a gray box there, put in fake nodes, which we could talk about later or maybe in the Q&A. So he sends this packet off to the first node in the sequence, which will extract its package from the big box. How he can be able to see which one is his is because in the process of selecting these IP addresses, Alpha also retrieved certain public keys from these nodes from the database. So he will be able to encrypt data to them individually, which they will try just to decrypt all the packs in the big box. And when they get a good checksum at one of them, they know it's their own. And as you saw there. There's also the possibility for the nodes in this path to inject fake packets into the box, all according to exact instructions found in their own packet, which is of course originating from Alpha. And one thing that's also in the packet is the IP address of the next node, that is the one that the packet should be sent along to, the modified packet, and also individual keys to authenticate between the next node and himself. So the next node will take his packet and maybe inject one fake packet, no fake packets, or many fake packets. And then this procedure will just continue until it has the box has traversed the entire path, and all the nodes have received their own package, and which means their own instructions and data, which they will extract and save. The connections, as you see, they will also remain open. And the important thing is that the last node will send the box back to Alpha, which means that if anyone had tried to mess with this packet, it would not be able, since each of the nodes authenticate each other, no one can rip the packet out of this path and route it through someone else, because no one can see the authentication keys of someone else, and they could also not inject any data, because the checksums are checked at each point. And just by receiving the packet again at Alpha, he knows that everyone is playing along and everything went well. So then for the second round, he will Alpha will create another goodie box for each of the nodes. Send it along the same connections. This time the data will be signed too, because this time we no longer have there no longer is a proof. Just because the box returns, it's not a proof that nothing was tampered with. In the last step, the IP, the information about where to send it would be compromised, so it would never return if someone tried to mess with it. But in this case, the connections are already set up, so the data will be signed by a key or certificate, verifiable by a certificate found in the first round in each of the boxes. As you see, the connection to the Y node is now disappeared. Disappearing for each step that the packet is sent, and this is because this is the last step of their participation in this process. As soon as they send that packet and close that connection, they can forget all about it. And the reason for having these Y nodes at all is that an attacker would of course be very interested in having another node controlled by the same attacker adjacent to him in the final routing path. So in the first step, where everyone agrees to be part of the node, no one should have the information of who will be the next node in the routing path and be able to fake that node timed out in order to get a new suggestion of a node like that. So that's the entire reason for the Y nodes. At this point, the Y nodes are disconnected, and at this point when we get to two X nodes, the X5 node will have received instructions in his new packet about you will get an incoming connection from X3 at this IP and this port and with this key and everything like that. So he will wait for that. There will be secure authentication. After this point, where in the special case node of X3, he will also, if this is an inbound routing path, register the routing path to the network database with a specially signed the routing table entry, which could only be created by Alpha. After doing that, the packet will just continue. All the X nodes will be connected in the same way, disconnecting the Y nodes, which will leave us with the complete routing path, which you will recognize from the previous figures, like this. And now Alpha knows that the process is complete. And if it is an inbound routing path, that is a routing path that could receive connections to Alpha, it will also be registered in the global network database routing table. So a little bit just about what's in the goodie box. You will have, I will have mentioned many of these things, and the routing path construction certificate is the certificate that will be used to sign the data in the second round. The IP import of the next and previous nodes, that's to make it possible for each individual node to authenticate to each other. Random IDs, that's the keys that they identify against each other with, in addition to the IP import, if someone could have stolen someone's IP address in between. Communication certificate of the next and previous nodes. Should be mentioned that all connections in the entire protocol are wrapped by SSL, so everything that an external attacker will see is only SSL communication, suggestibly to port 4432 to make it even harder to identify that what's actually going on and separate it from web traffic, which is of course very possible with the further analysis, traffic analysis. Some seeds and params for dummy package creation, some seeds and params for stream encryption keys, and these keys will be are the only things in this package which have not been used at this point. They will be used in the next process of creating routing tunnels. Some flags saying your next node, your Y node, your this is the first round, this is the second round, and things like that. A secure hash, the entire encrypted setup package, array, the entire outside box containing all the boxes, in order to make it impossible for any node to piggyback information on this in this box, because then any node will be able to piggyback encrypted information to any other possible node, non-adjacent node later in the path, which might be controlled by the same attacker, and then they can start an out-of-channel communication and combine their knowledge to compromise the anonymity. And finally, the cryptographic hash, which makes it possible for nodes to know which packets is their own, box is their own. And in the second round, we also have this sound routing table entry for that last node. So, the routing tunnels, the next step, once you have these routing paths, you would like to communicate with someone. And then we have a process for creating routing paths. And the main goal of this, with all these things, is of course, why do we make this so messy? Why can't you just have Alpha communicate with each node and say, you're in the path, here, communicate, connect to him. And why do you have this circular thing? Yeah, it's because otherwise the IP address of Alpha could possibly connected to the AP address of it, which is the main goal to stop with this protocol. That's why we have this whole circular thing with the routing path creation, because Alpha should never be connecting directly to the endpoint node, because the endpoint node would possibly know the AP address of this path, and that should never be connected to the IP address. So, now we have this path, and we want to create an outbound connection to a certain AP address. This AP address, just like with IP addresses, you have received from someone saying, this is the IP address to my server, this is the AP address to my server, so no different from normal internet communication. So, Alpha begins by sending a notification package through the route path, and he also remembers it. The next node reads this package, and at this point, it chooses one of those stream encryption keys I mentioned in the goodie box, which were the only thing not being used at that point. So, let's say he got 100 stream encryption keys. So he does, at random, completely random, he chooses one of these and remembers, then encrypts the packet with it and remembers, okay, this is what the packet looked like when I sent it away, when it was encrypted, and this is the key I used. So the next node just does the exact thing, it receives a packet, it chooses a key, it encrypts the packet, and it sends it to the next node. So the last node, he gets this, and he also chooses a key which he remembers, and then he makes a bigger package with containing both the package that he received and another package, which we will talk about in a moment. He then creates a completely new TCP connection to the previous node. The other one is not disconnected, it's just grayed out to show that it will not be used for this connection anymore. The node receives both the packets. He says, ah, this is that yellow packet that I sent before, so that must mean it will be connected to this key. So I'll remember this key and bind it to these two connections, the incoming and the outgoing connection. Then I'll encrypt, decrypt both of the packets with that key. And then, of course, the yellow packet will be decrypted to its original form, which was the green packet. And the other one will be decrypted to a new form, which we haven't seen before, that is red. So the next node receives the green. He says, ah, this is the green packet. I recognize that. It's that key. So I'll create a connection, and I'll bind that key to it. And I'll decrypt both packets, and then the black packet, of course, reappears, and a new packet now being decrypted with the keys of every node, the turquoise or whatever packet at the bottom, and alpha reads both. Now, the special package at the bottom, which the end node sent, is actually... It's put together in a special way, practically just repeating the same sequence. The meaning with it is to be able to make it extremely easy to do a brute force success test on it. So Alpha will be able to brute force and just do a very, very simple test to see, was the brute force key guess successful? And since Alpha knows all the stream encryption keys of the nodes, let's say 100, 100, 100, so 1 million keys, a combination of a million keys, he can start brute forcing over those keys. Everyone else in the entire internet or world, including these nodes, they won't know any of these stream encryption keys. So if they want to brute force this packet, they will need to brute force the entire, let's say, 128-bit space, which is quite intractable. But Alpha will only have to brute force, let's say, a million keys. And the good thing is that since Alpha is the node who initially selected these keys, he also can choose the number of keys to make it exact, to make the brute force time exactly 0.1 seconds, 0.5 seconds on his specific system, so that this operation will never take any unnecessary long time or annoyingly long time. So let's say 0.1 second later, he finds that, okay, these are the keys that were randomly selected by each of these nodes. Okay, now that I know this, I can Alpha can decrypt or encrypt messages to the last node, which no one else in between will be able to read, of course, because they only have their own key. So one layer of encryption is removed for each step, just like in Tor. And now the anonymous node informs the exit node of the IP address it wants to connect to by creating such an encrypted message. So he encrypts it once, and he encrypts it with all the keys, of course, in the correct order. And each node decrypts the packet with their key, which unwraps a layer of encryption, which results after the last decryption by the last node in a message that he can read. So at this point, he knows that, okay, this is an outbound connection. I'm gonna try to connect to that other IP address. So he looks up the IP address in the network database and does everything needed necessary for that. Then he sends just a packet containing random data back to the other node stated, so that the anonymized node, so that he will know that everything went okay. And at that point, the connection is fully established and at both ends, and the application layer can now start communicating over it, just like a TCP connection. And of course, this is four rounds, so it will be some delay latency compared to normal TCP connections, or actually quite a bit, but this shouldn't be really much. Like creating four, sending a few packets left and forth and back over TCP connections, and creating few new TCP connections. It shouldn't be completely bad. So the inbound route process for creating these nodes, it is done very similarly, which is quite important in this aspect. It's to the intermediate nodes, all nodes except the terminating node and the anonymized node, it will be completely impossible to know if this is a routing path, a routing tunnel created in an incoming tunnel due to an incoming connection, or in an outgoing tunnel due to an outgoing connection being initiated. So if we can just quickly scroll through this. As you can see, the black packet comes in a box again, just like the other case, just from the other side. And it's also important that this is why that sequence that was chosen while initially creating the routing path, why the ends of it. You have a sequence, and then you chose this to be the starting end of the process. That is because the intermediate nodes should not be able to conclude which if it's an outgoing or an incoming routing path at that point either. So at this point, they will not know where they are in the chain, in the path. They will not know in which direction the anonymized node is, and they will not know if they are adjacent to the anonymized node or not. So the beta node can immediately use the brute force, so the same brute force method as were used in the initial step. And he then knows the keys. He can create. He can decrypt all data and encrypt all data through the path. So the normal connections are created, sends packets. It's completely symmetrical to the last process of creating outbound nodes. It's very much not equivalent in the anonymized node and in the terminating anonymized terminating intermediate node, but for all the other intermediate nodes, it is completely symmetric and impossible to separate from each other, the two processes. So at this point, the incoming connection can be confirmed to the external peer, that is the outbound routing path of alpha, so it is. Well, and then it's just confirmed back to the anonymous node that, okay, everything is up and running. You can start sending data and tell the application layer that an incoming connection has occurred. So the connection is now fully established at both ends, and we have a fully anonymized complete connection between alpha and beta, which they can start communicating over. But in order to achieve this very important symmetry that we mentioned previously, you may have noticed that we have only done three rounds in this process, but four in the other one. So we will have to just send a fake packet down the route before the terminating node will start routing any data through the connections. This way, the process is completely symmetrical. Like that. So now onto some other things. Let's leave that process. That was the boring, dry part of the communication of the presentation. Just showing what happens at the protocol level to give some kind of idea that this could be done in a completely distributed manner, which is actually the entire goal of this project. Not to deliver a ready protocol, but just to show that yes, it could. You can establish connections. You can establish, and you can do it quickly. You can do it to see that it is possible to do this in a decentralized way like this. The end-to-end encryption. Once you have that this end-to-end anonymized connection, you can just perform, for example, double authenticated SSL over it, which will be not that a responsibility of the application, but still within the protocol. So that is end-to-end encryption will be enforced. And which also means secure authentication will be included with a PKI structure will actually be implied by this design, which is quite good, useful. And the use certificates for this SSL will of course be stored in the network database. In this case, contrary to the other information or certificates which were stored together with the IP addresses, it will be stored together with the AP addresses. So you say, I want to speak to this AP address, and you will get some certificates which you can then verify that you're speaking to the right person. So a little bit more about the IP backward compatibility. As I mentioned before, the format and functionality is equivalent, like address format, port semantics, connection semantics, and for the very apparent reason of being able to use previous applications without them knowing about it. So what you do is you create binary hooks for all common network APIs at the application API level, like the connect API with when the connect, the close, the bind, all APIs that are used for TCP connections. And I saw this previous talk from Roger of the Tor guys who said that this was very hard on Windows, and not there might be some problems that I have not noticed, but as far as I know, it's quite easy actually to do it, at least at that level, in a quite stable way actually. This means you won't need any further assistance from the author of the application. You won't need any source code, and the application won't even know that it's anonymized. It would just think, oh, I'm connecting to this IP address, while in reality it's connecting to that AP address. Under some conditions, this means that the common internet DNS system could even be used in the cases where the clients don't want to anonymize themselves, but only the server want to anonymize themselves. Otherwise, you can do the DNS side attack where the server has its own DNS server that will identify the users. But and also it'll be very simple to start supporting things like IPv6 with this design too, because it's not actually bound to the format of the addresses. Once you're inside the network database, they will just be treated as strings or similar. So a little bit more about the network database. It contains mainly two separate tables. One containing information about the IP addresses, the IP address table, which will have associated information, certificates, and similar to all the IP addresses in the table in this network, and then the AP address table, which will contain associated info for all AP addresses in the table. And these will, of course, be completely decoupled, and if they were to be connected, that would be catastrophe. And this database can be accessed through a very specific, strict API, as far as can be enforced, which means that no database queries, unnecessary database queries, will be able to be performed. Like, give me all the IP addresses in the net, or give me all the AP addresses in the net, and things that won't be necessary for the functionality of the protocol. And on top of the DHT, distributed hash table implementation, you could add things like voting algorithms, digital signatures, and even enforced entry expiry dates to make it even more secure and be able to enforce permissions and protect from certain kinds of malicious manipulation of this database and the query results. The network database should also be resilient to net splits, which is practically when you have a big cloud of nodes which have a common thing. It's an expression quite well known to IRC people, because then you have several servers which create one net, and if you cut them off, you could accomplish funny effects by isolating certain parts of the network, which is true here too. So you shouldn't be able to do that. And the distributed hash table technology actually will make that quite hard, and you can make it even harder if you just think about it. Another nice feature to have in a protocol like this would be manual override command support, which would be quite a powerful emergency measure to enable to protect against these DOS attacks, which are to be somewhat expected. You can also use it to protect from them. You can use it to restore after some possibly more or less successful DOS attacks, and you could also use it to protect against malicious nodes that are trying to DOS other nodes or DOS the network. So the way it's used is that you can send signed commands to some kind of central authority, like persons known by the maintainers of the open source project, or certain people who are trusted by the main maintainers, could have these keys. No one would have to know who has these keys. They just have them, and it will work anyway. So these trusted people would be able to sign commands and flood them all over the network through this distributed hash table implementation. Most distributed hash table implementations actually natively support such a functionality to efficiently flood certain commands to all the nodes in the network without any duplicate traffic. And the verification certificate, that is the public key used to verify these commands, will of course be hard-coded into the source code of the clients. So if you send a non-signed command, it will not be flooded any further than the exact node you send it to, which will prevent flooding DOS attacks of this kind. And also, of course, sending arbitrary commands to destroy the network. These commands will, of course, not be commands for executing commands on the computers of the clients, only commands for operating on the network, the anonymous network, like banning certain IP addresses who are trying to do bad things, or manually editing the network database if someone has inserted malicious contents into it. But never anything affecting client computers. And there's also no real worry, even if the keys of the signing keys would leak, because you can just release version 1.01, and then it will have new signing keys, and perhaps the persons who were able to crack the keys could ban some people from the network for the limited hours that before the new client came out, but it could be easily restored, so no worry. And this is just a schematic of an example of a high availability routing path design, because some people who see these routing paths, they would say like, but if only one node in this path would disconnect, which is of course quite possible and quite common in a completely decentralized protocol. Then the entire connection would break. So, but there are ways to create high availability routing paths while still keeping all these important properties of routing paths and routing tunnels that we have discussed. It's actually not as easy as could be thought at first sight, as could be probably seen at this picture, but it could be done, and we have thought about a design for it, and this is a schematic of one of these designs. As you can see, it's symmetric with two ends, and that's because of one of these problems of keeping the property of no intermediate node being able to tell if it's adjacent to the anonymized node or at all where it is. And the nodes that actually who are adjacent to the anonymous node, it will be very hard to make a design that would make them not able to derive anything of such sorts if you don't make it to split to symmetric like this. There are possibly other ways too, but there's quite a problem to do so anyway, we found. So a little bit of the aftermath of the implications of this such a protocol. Legal aspects and implications. We have one example where private organizations go after users very very aggressively today. So it's a good example of anyone who would try to bring down the system legally. And it's the file sharing example, of course. So today, lawsuits are being brought against people just on the basis of them connecting to a certain torrent, for example, because that torrent contains something that they don't want people to share and think it's illegal to share. So that's the state today. So, but if you use this protocol, they will probably want to come to this level of people that you can sue people for only using a file sharing protocol, because they think it could only be used for illegal means anyway, which is of course not true. But using a protocol like this will of course prevent that, because you will never be able to see that a certain person is using whatever protocol they are using inside the anonymization protocol, because it's all tunneled inside. So then they will probably try to bring lawsuits against the endpoints in the anonymization networks. Like, if they connect to one of these torrents, the method used today is that if you want to find out who's using a torrent, you can connect to it, and then you will get a list of IP addresses of nodes being a member of that torrent, and then you can start suing them. But in this case, these IP addresses that would be seen would only be the exit nodes of the random routing paths created, and these exit nodes would of course have nothing to do with the concept of file sharing, this particular case of file sharing, and they won't even have any access at all to the contents of the shared data. So that would make it quite a lot harder to be able to successfully sue them. And you could also compare it somehow to the routers of the internet. The routers on the internet who route encrypted data are very much similar to nodes in a network like this. They are just there to help people communicate generically, and they could happen to send illegal data through them while at the same time not being able to access it if it's encrypted. So that shows a little bit that it probably would be a bit harder to sue these nodes. So then the next step that these organizations would probably like to do is to sue people just on the basis of them using a certain anonymization protocol, because this anonymization protocol in turn could be used to use other protocols, which in turn could be used to do illegal stuff. So as you can hear, it will be a bit hard, but with enough lobbying, I guess you can do anything. And that's why you would like to hide the fact that prevent protocol identification, which, as previously mentioned, was one of the design goals of this protocol. So it should make it harder to do that too. Then I guess the only things that you could resort to is to be able want to sue people who use cryptography, because cryptography can be used to use protocols, which can be used to use protocols, which could be used to do bad things. And yeah, it could be done. I think France once had a ban on cryptography. I'm not sure if it's still like that. Cryptography where the government didn't have some secret keys that they could decrypt it with, but it could happen. It will happen. But I think it's increasingly harder to say something like that create a ban on cryptography. I don't think it'll be hard. And the next step, the final step, if that won't work, is of course to want to ban people, sue people for using the internet, I guess. But that's probably will be quite hard too. So on top of these technical things to which are made to prevent all these forces who would want to shut down a protocol like this and sue the users of it. I also thought some about license trickery that could possibly be done with a protocol like this. And my ID, which I'm not sure would be viable or efficient in any way, but I have some indications that it could have some of the intended effects. You have a license on the main specification saying that a certain end user license agreement, a EULA, must accompany all implementations of the protocol. So that's the license you put on the main specification or the reference implementation of it or whatever, in addition to the normal open source license. You add this little clause, and so this will make it illegal to compile, create, or base any implementation of this protocol without including this end-user license agreement with each implementation. This end-user license agreement, in turn, would say that that through using the certain the implementation in question, the user would understand and agree that no node in the anonymous network can or should be held responsible for any data being routed through it, due to the simple fact that the user neither has control over it, what it may contain, nor any possibility whatsoever to access the data itself. And this is not like I agree. It's not as much as them promising that they cannot sue them. It's accepting that they have been informed of this fact, so that it cannot be stated later that anything else. And the second part is which could be phrased in different matters, but in different ways, would say that the user of this implementation will agree to not use the implementation to gather data that could be used in filing a lawsuit, or actually to a better formulation would be to use it to extract and in any way save, store IP address information of the clients using this protocol, period. So this would have a little interesting effect, that if some of these organizations wanting to sue people would like to harvest IP addresses of let's say the file sharing example again with a torrent, they would have to use some kind of implementation of this protocol in the first place to be able to just connect to this torrent, because it's a completely separate network from the internet. And next, they would start harvesting the IP addresses of the adjacent of the nodes, of the last nodes of the routing paths. But if they do that, they will have broken the end user license agreement. And normally, this kind of organizations are, their main goal is to go after people who break end user license agreements or break intellectual property rights. So it would become quite an ironic situation, which would be quite annoying to them, at least. So then they say, okay, we make our own implementation of this protocol and make our own client. Well, if you don't include the end-user license agreement in this implementation, you will have broken the license of the protocol, and again, you have broken intellectual property rights, and you're there at this ironic situation again. So it could be quite funny and somewhat efficient. But of course, you would probably not be able to go all the way to court and prevent some of its users to be if someone tries to sue them, they could probably sue them anyway, but this will probably make it harder, at least for them to not look like hypocrites, and this could affect the lawsuits, and not to mention their interest in doing such a thing. So we're starting to come near the end. Not quite yet, though. But let's review the design goals that we set up at start, and see if this design and implementation that I've been speaking about for a while now, if how well it fits these design goals. So, design goal number one: the complete decentralization part. The protocol has no central points or even nodes that are individually more valuable to the collective function of the anonymous network than any other. So, if you attack one node, you bring down that node. And it's the same thing that if that node would just disconnect his computer and go to bed. So which will be quite common, I guess. So no worries there. And there are no single points of the network to attack, no server, no anything, and no one to sue who runs a server or anything, because there are no central servers. So I guess we could say that this design goal is pretty much accomplished. Design goal number two: maximum DOS resistance. Well, DOS resistance has at least been a concern during the entire design process, and it should be continue to be a concern when this protocol is further developed and implemented in the end, hopefully. And that should limit the attack vector substantially. It could, of course, always be improved. So that's the entire reason for having a project like this. It will need many knowledgeable people who will be able to do input, give input. It must be continue to be a constant area of concern and improvement. But I guess you could say that this far, it's sort of as far as we know covered. Review the third design goal, theoretically secure anonymization. Well, all involved risk probabilities can be expressed in terms of known probabilities with the current design. All security is based on cryptography and randomness, and it could thus be explained with defined with cryptographic proofs. No obscurity parts, nothing is based on obscurity. And hopefully no gaping holes have been left to chance, or that some of you will be able to tell me right after this presentation. But review and improvements are, of course, always needed. The good thing is that the similarities with, for example, the Tor protocol will be able to make use of many of the valuable experiences that they have lived through the years. Those that Roger mentioned in his previous talk in this room. So I guess we can say that one's covered so far. Then the design number 4, theoretically secure end-to-end encryption. Well, all data is encrypted in multiple layers. Well-known and trusted algorithms should be able it should provide end-to-end encryption. And since all connections are wrapped by SSL, which is very well known and well used, the protection from external eavesdroppers should, under all circumstances, be at least equivalent to that of SSL, which is quite okay. So we can consider that one accomplished too. Design goal number 5, isolation from the normal internet. It is impossible to contact and communicate with any regular IP address. You can't just say, I want to speak to this IP address, because there's no way to tell the protocol that, tell the client that. You won't reach it. It only understands IP addresses. So that's impossible, and therefore the network can't be used to anonymously commit illegal acts against any computer that has not itself joined the network and exposed certain services to it and accepted the risks of allowing anonymous communication with these services. So we can consider that one comes to, I guess. Design goal number 6, protection against protocol identification. Yeah, well, SSL connections are used as an external shell for all connections used by the protocol, and suggestibly they would also all use the standard port, standard web server SSL port, TCP 443, which would really simple to just filter on the SSL on this on that port, and because it would be this SSL and it would be the same SSL port as normal web connections. But of course, you could practically always, with enough advanced traffic analysis methods, identify certain kinds of traffic, or at least distinguish certain kinds of traffic from other certain kinds of traffic, which in this case would be normal SSL web connections. But the goal is to make it hard enough, because if it's hard enough, it will take up too much resources, and most of all, produce too many false positives to be practically or commercially viable. Because if you have just, let's say, a few percent of false positives in blocking SSL connections from an ISP, that the users of that ISP would not be very happy that every one or two connections in 100 are blocked right away from the when they are surfing to their bank. So that's good. So I guess we could say that we're well on the way with that one too. Design goal number 7, high volume and throughput capacity. And this is quite interesting one. Due to the previously mentioned factors or facts that there's no practical way for a node to know if it's communicating directly with a certain node or if it's talking with the terminating intermediate node of a routing path owned by an anonymized node. It actually means that Alpha could talk directly to Beta and still have a reasonable doubt about who they're actually talking to. So in many cases, you can use extremely short or no routing paths at all. So direct peer-to-peer communication, and yes, the IP address would be exposed, and under certain conditions, this would not be good at all. But under other certain conditions, this would not really matter, since reasonable doubt would be the goal in some way. So that would, of course, result in very high transfer speeds in those locations that you could connect directly between nodes, because it would be like, except for the multiple layers of encryption, which will be handled just fine by the hundreds of processor cores that will be in everyone's computer during the coming years, there will be really fast communication. So we can see that one accomplished too in some way. Then the last one, well, the protocol supports arbitrary network communication, so it's generic. The protocol design has been abstracted in a way that each individual level of the protocol can be exchanged and redesigned without the other parts being affected. Well, just abstracted. And finally, the backward compatible. Yeah, the protocol does emulate and hook all TCP network APIs and can thus be externally applied to any application that uses normal TCP communication. And it could be anonymized without it itself even knowing. So we can consider that one done too. Now, finally, now even closer to the end, a little comparison with other anonymization solutions, just to see the some certain differences. And of course, this first one is a bit provocative, yeah. And Tor is very, very good protocol, but as mentioned, it lacks some of the design goals that this one has, which. And these design goals are much important to many anonymization applications that people would use this protocol for. So this one is designed from the ground up with the current and future practical anonymization needs and demand in mind. It is compatible with all existing and future network-enabled software without any need for adaptations or upgrades. And yes, there are some, as Roger mentioned, some tools to do that for Tor, but as he also mentioned, no good such tools for Windows, and also it's a kind of ad hoc thing that was not in the real protocol specification. We have higher throughput. Throughput is a big problem, and through the things I just mentioned with the short routing paths. With the long routing paths, of course, you don't have the high throughput, but we have the possibility for it with reasonable doubt. No traffic volume limits, which is quite very, very important. In Tor, it's that you shouldn't transfer large volumes. You will be kicked. You will be breaking the rules. So people can't watch their YouTube and whatever they would like to use high traffic volume for. It's isolated from the normal internet, the Phantom Protocol, which is also one of the very important points, because no one would like to run a distributed protocol where they are automatically an exit node, out proxy, if they feel like my door could be kicked in by the FBI any day because the NASA was hacked from my computer. That's not a good thing. With Phantom, that can happen. With Tor, that can happen. You have end-to-end encryption, enforced end-to-end encryption. So even if users should know themselves that Tor is not safe to use unencrypted, and that application developers, they should always use encrypted protocols. But what it really means is that if I'm not completely sure of the details of all the applications I'm using, are they using cryptography? Are they using secure cryptography? Then I won't dare using them over Tor anyway. But in this case, it is built into the protocol, secure end-to-end encryption, so you will never have to worry. Just run your applications as usual, and it'll be fine. Hopefully. And also DNS leak is a vulnerability that has been argued against Tor previously, but Roger mentioned it too, that some applications can be provoked to do DNS lookups, and then you can sit there and catch them and connect. But in this case, since we are already hooking all network APIs, the application can't do anything, how much ever it wants to. So we're blocked that. And the last point I'm not sure of at all. Perhaps not. It better prevents positive protocol identification. But I know Tor has put some work into that. So the last point could be completely false. So just another relatively well-known anonymization protocol, not at all as known as Tor, but within the world of internet anonymization, it is at least a little known. It's called I2P, and it's actually quite good. In many ways, very similar to Phantom, but still some differences. Phantom is compatible with all these existing products, while in I2P you have to practically recompile and redesign every product that should be used with it, which reduces its usability to nothing for normal users. They have one client for blogging, one for quite limited product for using BitTorrent, and that will halt adoption beyond any useful levels, which in turn will reduce, keep speed and security down, which will be very bad for the protocol. They also don't have end-to-end encryption after a certain version. They had it at first, but then they removed it. I'm not sure at all why they did that, but that's the way it is. The last point item is just as with Tor. I'm not sure about that one because I haven't been able to dig up enough technical information about their communication, low-level communication protocols. But it might be a case, might be the case, might not be. And finally, a comparison with other anonymization solutions is the comparison with specific programs. For example, anonymized P2P. You have a client that does a certain thing, like IRC, file sharing, and then you build anonymization into this one. I can't say anything specific about the technical points of that one, of course, because there's no specific application here. But it could very well have the weaknesses of the other things that I mentioned in the previous slides here with Tor and I2P. But I can't say anything because we're not talking about a specific application. But there would probably be less work and less interest in such a product than a generic anonymization product, which would mean less resources put into making it safe. So that's for the technical part. But such a product Phantom would also be less likely for a general ban, like if a certain organization would lobby for this protocol should be illegal because it could only be used to share files illegally. Why would a file sharing application want to be anonymous? It's only to break the law. So then maybe you could make it illegal completely, but with a generic anonymization protocol you can't say that because it can be used for lots of good stuff and it will be used for lots of good legal things. So that's one advantage. And also the generic nature of a generic protocol opens it up, of course, infinitely much more potential than just binding the anonymization to a certain activity. Now we're really closing in to the end, and I'm just going to list a few known weaknesses just to be able to for everyone to know and think about. So if all the nodes in a routing path are being controlled by the same attacker, this attacker can connect the anonymized node to the entry or exit node, and that would of course connect the IP address with the AP address, which would compromise the anonymity. And that's not good. That's compromised the entire meaning for the protocol. But again, no data can still be eavesdropped, no matter if you control every node and every network link in the entire system. So you can only conclude which AP address is that route is talking to, not what IP address is in the other end, because this is only single routing path. And again, it's very important to note that an attacker who controls, say, three nodes in a routing path, he will never be able to know that, okay, are these three nodes, do they constitute the entire routing path, or is the last node that the last compromised node is speaking to actually yet another intermediate routing path? Intermediate node, routing node, which makes it very hard to use, even if you would control the entire path. You wouldn't know if you are controlling the entire path, which would make you unable to act on that information in many ways. And again, the algorithms for the node selection of the routing paths are controlled by the nodes themselves, the ones that are the nodes that are protected by that actual routing path, so they can select the trade-off between efficiency and security by themselves. And also, you can use optimize the algorithms for that. So like never use any, which Roger also mentioned, like never use any nodes in the same C network, B net, A net, ISP, country, whatever. Two, the second weakness. If an attacker monitors the traffic of all nodes in the network, that attacker will be able to conclude the same thing as in the previous weakness, the first one, without even having to doubt where the routing path ends. Because in that case, he would be able to correlate that okay, the traffic enters here, traffic enters goes out there, enters there, goes out there, and there. It isn't any traffic going out there, so then you can, at a much higher probability, conclude that the routing path ends there. But this was, as you know, what I stated as a limitation of the protocol from the start, and this situation isn't, at least at this point, very, very likely. Sure, there are some countries with data retention and everything today, and big three-letter organizations doing lots of wiretapping. But there are also a lot of countries who would not want to cooperate with those agencies at this point. So if you just bounce it between a few countries or just have one node in such a country, then it would be more secure. And some anonymization protocols try to counter this kind of attack, even this kind of attack, by delaying data that each node receives and by sending out junk data. But since this goes against the high throughput design goal of Phantom, we won't do that. And we really, for most applications, we won't need that kind of security either. So yeah. The third and last weakness, individual intermediate nodes in a routing path could try to, what they would want is to find another compromised intermediate node further down the routing path, even though it is not adjacent to that one. But with the current design, and what our goal is that if two compromised nodes in a path are not adjacent, they should not be able to conclude in any way that they are in the same routing path, and thus be able to correlate their knowledge. But what could they do about that? Yeah, they could try to use some kind of covert channels to communicate this information, and probably they would like to communicate the 32 bits that constitute their IP address, because after that has been communicated, they could of course create separate channels and communicate whatever information they want to. So what could such covert channels be? Yeah, it could be timing of the data that is routed through the path, like make some small delays and encode information into these details, or even more likely and more efficient, encode information into the chunk size of the communicated data. Like they receive 20 bytes, then they send 3, then 2, then 1, and with a very small delay, and only for until they have communicated this data. So this is quite a possible attack actually, which could be countered to some degree in some ways with splitting up and merging data. But it's quite hard to do it in any really, really good way without compromising the high volume. High transfer rate design goal. So that's probably the biggest problem that should be thought about more. But again, if they manage to cooperate to communicate, they will not be able to know if they are at the end of the node, at the route path, adjacent to the anonymized node, which would luckily heavily reduce the usefulness of such an attack. So, just to sum things up, what was the current state of the project? Well, there is a white paper which contains this information and quite a lot more details. So this is what I have been describing, and what the paper contains is an initial suggestion, an example for requirements and design of such a next generation anonymization protocol. But again, it's not a complete specification ready for immediate implementation. But although it is quite detailed and comprehensive, so it is more or less a full example of how you could do it, just to prove that it could be done. It should be worked on more. This presentation, if you want to see all the fancy animations, which would perhaps help get a faster overview of the communication process, you could download it too. And there's also, I created a Google Code project, which contains a code trunk without any code yet, a discussion group where you can discuss stuff, and a wiki where you could store and publish the results of these discussions, I guess. And also a blog where interested people could follow the progress of the project. So, the final summary. The internet and its users are in increasingly bigger need of a good anonymization solution, which meets the requirements of today and beyond, not just the low volume communications and other limitations of the current protocols. At least in order for this protocol or such a protocol to become some kind of de facto standard for easy and secure anonymization that many people would use. So far, the Quantum Protocol has had the main goals of exploring the optimal requirements for such an anonymization solution, providing examples of solutions for all the problems that would reasonably possibly be related to this kind of project, and it also has the goal of inspiring discussions of the design of such a system, which we will hopefully hear more about at this conference. You are very welcome to contact me for more questions, discussions, anything, and I would really like to speak more to the maintainers and developers of the current projects like Tor and I2P, because I'm sure there are lots and lots of things that could be done collaboratively, and much to be won there. So please contact me, any Tor or I2P people here. And the final goal is to be somehow the starting point and central point for the emergence of such an open, de facto standard for free, secure, and ubiquitous internet anonymization. So the next phase, what would that be? Yeah, would be to discuss the problems and in the end stipulate a final 1.0 protocol specification. Start to implement it. That phase, both with the implementation and the design, we will need the help and collaboration of many knowledgeable people and dedicated people. So again, if you feel like this is interesting, please contact me or please join on the project site, which is at this URL. So now we can have the Q&A, and I guess we will be moving to another room for that, I think. So that's all for now. You have my email address here.